The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
A very happy Thanksgiving. Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Casey Kerr, Ali Moreno's here, and Frank LaBeouf is here as well. Only one place to start today's show, isn't it? Uruguay against South Korea.
What?
We'll talk about Brazil first, shall we? Who kicked off their campaign with a 2-0 win over Serbia. Slow first half, really, from the favourites. Got going, though, after the break. A couple of goals from Richarlison, the second one in particular. Very impressive as they kick things off with all 3 points. Well, we had him on after the Argentina defeat, so why not have Pablo on now after Brazil victory 48 hours later? What a treat.
Hey, it hurts
for Pablo. Not only that, I'm not going to start with you, Pablo. We'll come into studio first. Ali, how impressed were you with Brazil today?
Okay.
Well, I thought that first half, it was the classic performance of a team who's just getting going in the World Cup, just trying to figure some things out. Okay, we're going to be solid defensively. I thought Casemiro was really good, not only in the first half, but throughout the course of the game. And then Brazil just slowly but surely started working their way through Serbia. Now, Serbia, very well positioned defensively, very well organized. Spaces were tight, physically very imposing, going on the challenge, 50-50 challenges. You knew that they were there to compete, but eventually Brazil and Brazil's quality took over. It could have been earlier in the first half had Rafinha taken advantage of an opportunity that he had, but then eventually in the second half, what we saw is the variety of Brazil. Without Vinicius having been splendid, without Neymar having been outstanding, Brazil still scored 2 goals and could have scored more in the second half. And I thought that something that we have talked about time and time again with Brazil coming into this World Cup, one of the things that was most impressive about Brazil is that once you start taking people off the field and then the guys that are coming on the field, some of those guys would be automatically the best player in a lot of the teams that are in this tournament right now. And yet they're coming off the bench for Brazil. There are so many options, so many opportunities to come for all sorts of different players with all sorts of different styles. And then Richarlison, who we have to highlight the second goal. What a finish that was. Now, in terms of the first touch, not so great. The second touch was perfect. And game, set, match. Brazil get off to a good start.
They really got going in that second half. They were so impressive.
Yes, and we always talk about the consistency of a game and some players. And it's what they did. They worked hard the first half, but the Serbian, they were there to stop them, and they did well. But they kept on going, and they kept on trying to find a solution to score a goal. And the second half, it happened because I think the Serbian couldn't take it anymore. And that's what it is. When you face a very strong team, they're going to find you, try to find your weaknesses, and they're going to work on that, and they're going to find another solution. People are coming from the bench, and they're going to put another power on it because they have a squad. It happened what we expect from every big teams. What we wanted to see about Argentina, that, yeah, it can be hard because who you are facing have qualities, but you have to find, because you're supposedly better than them, the way to score goals. It was Brazil did. And then when they scored the first goal, they kept on going.
Yeah.
Where the other team normally drop a little bit, get the possession of the ball, they finished the game. They were really impressive today.
Yeah, very impressive indeed. They made the most of the space that was afforded them. It's kind of a perfect start for them in the sense that it's just getting that momentum going.
And I think the momentum comes so much from the attitude. And, you know, the guys talked about how it kind of built in the crescendo of then taking players on, creating chances, and then finally taking advantage of the chances they created. But it all started from the right attitude from the very beginning. And obviously, when we moved to Pablo, you can ask him if Argentina had the right attitude in the match the other day. But I mean, but that's the part of it. It's the part when you're the favorite, when you're one of the big boys, and you're going against a side that the world thinks you should beat. The attitude has to be right first,
yeah,
and then let your talent showcase. And Brazil got it right.
Pablo, defensively going up against this Brazil attack, it's just going to be a nightmare. We saw the struggles that Serbia had because you've got Vinicius Jr., you've got Neymar, Rafinha, Richarlison. How do you try and handle them all?
Well, Brazil have so much quality up front. They have wonderful players. And defensively, when you face them, you have to do almost a perfect game. You have to be very aggressive then. You have to keep that defensive shape very compact and narrow. Don't give them any space because they can produce a moment of magic and any of them can score great goals. So, this is what we've been talking about Brazil. Up front, they have so many options. Okay, Neymar could be injured. I don't know how long. Hopefully, not too long, because we want to see all the best players in this World Cup. But then they have Gabriel Jesus. I'm sorry. Lad, I was looking at the wrong camera.
We didn't see it.
Yes, this is what I was saying. One is in green and one is in red. I was looking at the one in green, sorry. Next question then.
Pablo mentioned it, the injury to Neymar. We saw him in tears. Chichi said, you know, they're going to have 24 hours to assess, but he should be fine. But Pablo, it just has such a different feel. This is a conversation almost about Neymar compared to 4 years ago, compared to 8 years ago, definitely. In that, even if they lose him, and we know he is without a doubt one of the best players in the world on his day, it's not the end of the world that maybe it was in the past. Or is that being too optimistic?
No, well, Neymar is one of the greatest players of this generation. In the way he's been performing for PSG, and he's doing well for the country and for the club, and he's a leader for this generation as well, for Brazil. Like as I say before, hopefully it's not too bad. It looks bad. When you look at the picture, it seems like his uncle is not right. But, we'll see the next 24 hours or 48 hours if he can recover from that uncle, from that injury. We wish him all the best. Hopefully he's okay for the next game. But, this is his World Cup. I don't know, in 4 years' time we will see the best of Neymar again. And he spoke about this a few weeks ago, saying that he doesn't know for how long he will keep playing. So he knows they have a really strong team. They are one of the big contenders to win the World Cup. So, of course, they will need the best of Neymar.
They have qualities for sure around him, and it's not only about Neymar. But I think if you put Neymar out of the business because of his injury, you don't know what will be psychologically the reaction of the other player, because he's the leader. He's the leader of the team, and he has focused on everything that the media needs to allow the others to be quiet, in a quiet space and work in their ways. If you take out Neymar of the situation, the media and everybody is going to look what they can go to, or who they can go to. And maybe the pressure of the others is going to start making them shaking, and you don't know. So having him, I think it's a plus. It's a plus,
of course,
because of football. It's a plus because of the media. It's a plus because of the psychological aspect of the game. And having him out of the business would be a damage, I think, for Brazil.
Can Brazil win the World Cup without Neymar?
Yes, they can. And the reason I say that is, while we can focus on the depth of Brazil in the attack, which would be the obvious answer to your question, you give all these players an option to actually have an opportunity to impact the game, and they can impact the game. I don't want to focus on that so much. I want to focus on the fact that while it is easy to see Brazil attacking and all that talent, what I thought was really outstanding from Brazil today is their ability to continue to press and counter-press. The fact that they were on top of Serbia, and whenever Serbia got possession of the ball and then tried to play out, Brazil was right there to win the ball right back. That balance and that ability to win the ball right back puts Brazil in a different category altogether. It's only a few teams around the world that are able to do this and do it well. Brazil is doing it and is doing it together. And then the attacking part takes over. Neymar is an important part to this team, a critical part to this team. But I think it's a part of this team that they're going to be able to address his absence. They have done it before. They have won Copa America without Neymar when he got injured with his foot and was not able to compete in Brazil. They won that Copa America without Neymar. So there is an experience here for this team in having played a tournament where people don't expect them to win because Neymar is not on the field, and then they're able to push through. It's not ideal. It's not what you would want. But can they do it with this group of players and the mentality of this group and how together this group is right now? I think they're capable.
I think when you talk about the balance of this side, there's some phenomenal Brazilian teams from the 70s that wish they had the goalkeeping they have right now. Mm-hmm. Wish they had the 10 field players fighting in the same direction, not, hey, these guys are so phenomenal. Let's go watch them play with the ball, and then we'll wait there. And, oh, no, we lost it. Counterattack. This looks like a team, and we've seen it, you know, okay, 90 minutes of it, plus the outrageous amount of stoppage time. That seems to be the theme of this World Cup so far. But you see a team that looks focused, that looks together, that's not only coached well, but they're accepting what the coach wants and have a goal in mind, not an individual goal. Look, this is my tournament to highlight myself to the world. No, we think we have a good team here, and we think if we all play collectively, we can win this thing. And that's what I see from this Brazil side.
And that was evident, of course, when we saw them dancing, coming off the bus together, the celebrations after the goals, Pablo. There seems to be a real collective bond between these players.
Yeah, no, not the first time that we have seen this from Brazilian doing before the game. This is a way of life for them. That's the way I feel football, you know, and that's brilliant to see. And you know, dancing, singing and all that is something that as Argentinian, I don't know. I probably never done it before. You know, you have to understand the Brazilian side like that. So, okay, if they like it, perfect. Well done.
Yeah, and imagine Harry Maguire.
You know, in the tunnel in 98, we waited like for 15 minutes in the tunnel with them, with all the team, you know, Rivaldo, Ronaldo, Bebeto, and they were all singing and dancing. You just want to go for a fight.
Yeah.
You just go. You wait for 15 minutes. It's like they're teasing you. You're getting upset.
Right, because they were dancing.
They were dancing, singing. We understand it's part of the culture.
Right.
But you're there. You're very tuned in. And you say, well, those people, they don't care.
Right. Yeah. And who was dancing at the front? And Frank LeBeuf.
The problem, Pablo, the Argentinian guys would spill their mate.
Yeah.
If they were trying to dance before the game. It just gets in the way.
I suppose the big question now, Pablo, is do you want to change your pick for the winners of the World Cup from Argentina now to Brazil?
Oh, wow.
Not if he wants to go home.
Never.
It's only one defeat, Dan. Come on, still two more games to go. I still believe Argentina can win the World Cup. I know it's more difficult now, because if we don't win against Mexico on Saturday, then we'd be so difficult to keep our World Cup dream alive. But at least let me be positive now.
that's fair. I will offer you the same choice.
Yeah, no,
if you want to change from Denmark.
No, I still feel good. The Drew. Not everybody is capable of changing his mind like Shaka. You know, like
Shaka 24 hours. It straight away.
24 hours. Brazil.
Yeah.
Well, Denmark. You know, of course, you're gonna see. You know. Everybody was teasing me about Canada. I think they changed a little bit their mind. The little Craig Burley on my left side, you know, Mali. You know,
they lost.
Yeah, they lost, but they shouldn't have lost because...
But they did lose, Frank.
Yeah, yeah, but...
Your bracket can't be a should-have bracket.
We'll see at the end. I think they're going to go through.
Right.
Hopefully for Pablo, Argentina are going to go through. Otherwise, Dan's going to be on your back all the time, you know. And hopefully Denmark's going to go through because... I need them to go through.
Good. Not nice.
We're begging now.
Let's move on, shall we, to the other game in the group. Maybe not quite as exciting. Just a reminder, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Switzerland, of course, beating Cameroon in the early game by 1-0. For more on this, let's go out to our team in Qatar.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to all our colleagues over in the USA. We are definitely feeling thankful to be here at our fabulous set in Doha for this FIFA World Cup. And I know I'm thankful to be back with Julien Laurent and Nedim Onuwa. Especially thankful because Switzerland were in action today. And we know that Nedim is a resident Swiss expert. But we'll get to him in just a bit. Jules, let me start with you because Switzerland managed to just get the win in what I call the Redemption Classico. I know your boy, Granit Xhaka, of course, in action. Choupo-Moting, of course, a lot of the headlines for Cameroon, but it was Mbolo who, interestingly enough, is the one that scored the goal for Switzerland, and he's actually born and bred in Cameroon.
Yeah, very powerful moment, I thought, in this World Cup. His celebration or non-celebration, we should say, because he scored a goal on a very good piece of play from Switzerland. The ball from Xhaka to Freuler breaks the line, and then he goes wide to Shaqiri. The cross is good. Defensively, Cameroon should have done better, but it's a good finish by Mbolo, and then he wants to go, and he stops and doesn't celebrate in obviously homage to his father's country and where he was born and where he grew up, or at least some of his childhood. So very powerful moment. Switzerland, I think, in the end, just edged it because they were just a bit more clinical on that chance. Yeah. They had other chances. They were also very well organized. And despite a good start from Cameroon, they just never had that cutting edge.
Nedim, you happy with your Swiss boys now? They've proven your point correct?
Yeah, all my points about all the things I didn't know before the tournament started, they all came into fruition. Yes, you're right. But I think Switzerland did look good. I think there wasn't that much between the sides, but at times, it's just that clinical nature in the final third. You're not expected to win every game by 2-3 goals. You just need to score one. And obviously, you know, that was the one from Mbolo. And it was strange. It felt like a first to see somebody not celebrate a goal for the national side at a World Cup.
Because you know how much it means.
Yeah, it means so much. And, you know, there'll be people back in Cameroon who would be both, like, happy and sad to see him do what he did. But it's a great moment. And it's a very, very big goal for them because it really wasn't that much between the two sides.
Kind of like me when I see Raheem Sterling score for England. It's okay, Raz. I forgive you. Anyways, it's so good that we have both of you back at the desk.
Why is this
the first time we've had you guys at the desk since we had a massive matchup called El Trashico.
You know
you have El Clasico, and now we've dubbed this El Trashico because it is a bunch of trash football played by Nedim Onuwa and Julien Laurent. We gave you a teaser of it. Four aside, basically.
Well.
It was four players against four players.
At times.
It wasn't trash football, actually. There was just a lot of trash talking between these two. So let's have a look at how everything went down.
You want a head start or not?
Careful what you wish for. There's something within me that doesn't want to come out. But you want me to bring it out.
Campeone, 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 campe
so very much like France winning the last World Cup. Jules, I feel got some more skills than I thought.
I do feel like a world champion, I have to be honest. There's always another game, don't worry. There's a time where you can become better, you can work on your weaknesses. All of that, you know.
Yeah.
There'll be a time where you win, hopefully, for you.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But to be honest, the bigger thing is, you know, I left the game, I scored 5 goals, Jules scored 1. So
did Julian surprise you, though?
4 assists.
No. I've heard he's good, and he's okay.
But you're the true Premier League footballer. Like,
I'm retired.
Well, the former Premier League footballer.
My role, whenever I play in these amateur games, is to make sure my team enjoy it. And my team enjoyed it.
You were a great motivator.
Can you enjoy it when you lose? I'm not so sure.
I don't know.
When you get battered, it's not even...
Let's call it second place.
No, but to be honest, if somebody says the next goal is the winner...
Nah, that doesn't count.
Does that mean you win or does that mean you lose?
Am I hearing that we need a rematch?
No, we're not going to go for a rematch. I've heard through one of my sources that may have been scouted for Julien Laurent's team in a mighty matchup, the second one in Doha.
Well, like I said, we've got some also big heavy hitters in some of our other teams as well. Like I said, we got to have Pablo Zabaleta drop by. We had Kun Agüero drop by. I mean, we can scout them and we could have a mini city team up against Jules.
He's my captain, though.
He'll be your captain?
The others are not good enough.
There's a part two to this. Just make sure you're ready. Why don't you just say
that it was our dear producer, Mike Rodriguez, who let you down?
Because it wasn't.
Trash football.
It literally wasn't. It was a host of factors. Maybe it was myself.
I can't believe
maybe I should have scored 10 instead of 5.
I've thrown producers. Wow. Used to Mike under the bus, but he knows with mad love for him. Everyone loves Mike.
Mike made some good saves, to be fair to him.
All right, Mike's in my ears right now telling me to toss it down because he's just tired of the attention on him. Back to you, Dan.
And you thought the Uruguay game was bad.
Yeah, true.
It was state of that. The goalkeeping in all of that,
I think,
was questionable.
For Natum to win... he needs to go buy a new goalkeeper. Well, sorry, Mikey. That was...
He's not apologized. His performance does not deserve an apology.
Pablo, they want you to go and play. You're better than that.
Pablo's better than goal.
Absolutely. I was looking at the rhythm of the game. I can play, for sure. Next time, I need to tell Nadum to invite me. I need to I need to play some football. I'm not doing anything.
The real question is, why do you want to spend like an hour under the sun there, you know, to play that stupid game, you know, with three against three?
Wow. Thank you, Craig Burley. That's good.
Hey, you know who scored in that game?
Seb. Seb scored on Mike.
Oh, wow.
That's when you know that Mike was terrible in goal.
Okay. Let's take a look then at how Group G stands after that. Not that game, the Switzerland game. Brazil then and Switzerland kick things off, both with a win. Just a reminder, of course, Gab and Jules are at the World Cup. Be sure to check out their podcast, which is available to listen to now over on the website.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C-E-bikes.com.
ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid as we focus on what turned out to be quite the game, Portugal against Ghana. It was terrible until a dodgy penalty was awarded. Cristiano Ronaldo converted, and that just kicked everything off. It kind of lit the touch paper and it exploded into life for the last 30 minutes. In the end, Portugal winning by 3-2. At halftime, there is absolutely no way you thought this game was going to end 3-2.
No, it had 0-0 written all over it, perhaps with a hint of a 1-0 win by Portugal, maybe. And the penalty happened and you thought, well, this is exactly the goal that you'd imagine would finish this game. 1-0, a penalty that, let me just tell you, even by my very loose standards, even though we teach this in my diving camp, and I'm proud of the way that Cristiano Ronaldo was able to draw the foul, it is not a penalty. It was given by Ismael Elfat, and then Cristiano Ronaldo steps up, scores a goal, and you think, that's it. 1-0, take the 3 points. And then this game just went crazy.
Yep.
It went crazy because it's not like they were creating chances everywhere. It's not like it was back and forth. But every chance that they seemed to create ended up in a goal for both teams. And when you think it couldn't get any crazier, the potential ending to this game could have been so much different. Oh. Diogo Costa just drops the ball in front of him. He doesn't realize Iñaki Williams is behind him. Iñaki Williams actually plays it perfectly. He gets to the ball. Now he's going to turn and hit it on goal. Score the game-tying goal. He slips.
Yeah.
The toughest thing about that was the camera panned away from it.
I know.
And so I saw him hiding back there, and I'm thinking, does he see him?
Oh, did you preempt it?
Does he see him coming out there? Because I played in a game at White Hart Lane where Robbie Keane did the exact same thing to Sheffield Wednesday.
Right.
And kind of snuck in, stole it, and dribbled in the back of the net. And so when I saw him hiding back there, I thought, no, surely he's going to look over his shoulder and just boot this ball down the pitch. And then when they pan back and the crowd's going crazy, and if he doesn't slip, it's one of the most embarrassing goals
it's 3-3.
In World Cup history.
Let's get the temperature on the penalty then. Ali says no. Frank?
Well, who's going to say yes?
Well, Mark Clattenburg, obviously, former...
Yeah, he's a ref. He does not understand football, so that's... like every ref in the world.
So once Ronaldo touches the ball, that's the argument, isn't it?
No, but the thing is, Mark was saying that Ronaldo was kicked and was pushed on his back.
Yep.
No, I checked and I said, well I want to find a way to explain that it's possible there is a clearly teeny tiny possibility to accept the penalty. But at the end of the day, as Ali said, that was a good penalty because he started the game.
Yeah.
So I want to thank the American referee because he was an American referee.
There you are, Casey,
have made that mistake to allow us to enjoy the rest of the game.
Pablo, penalty for you or not?
No way. That was not a penalty. Very soft. Cristiano goes down very easily, and for me, it's not a penalty.
Casey?
Look,
then,
I understand.
Of course, changes the dynamic of the game, but... No.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that with the rules of VAR, once it was called, that it... Even with Frank's, you know, there was the slightest of contact, which maybe there was... You knew that it wasn't going to get overturned. So that's why I was a little bit disappointed when Elfaf called it, not just because I knew how difficult it was going to be to overturn it, even though knowing that it was the softest penalty you're going to be awarded. So if he lets it go, and then look, if replay shows that Ronaldo got crushed,
right,
which clearly all of us saw that he didn't, then okay, then you can go back. When something like a penalty can change a game so drastically, you got to be sure. At least that was the attitude before, because you didn't have VAR. Mm. Now you got VAR, you can actually let it go and see if it actually was. The same with all the offside stuff. All right, let it go. We'll play 5 more minutes. 3 guys will get injured, but okay, oh no, now it's offside.
Can I just tell you that in terms of the penalty, we agree, not a penalty, right? But I have to say to the Ghana defender, why are you even making this challenge?
Right.
Ronaldo's going away from goal. He has no other options. He has no support. There's no need for you to get yourself in this sort of position. And when you get yourself in this sort of position, I can tell you from experience, the moment I feel that contact, as slight as it may be. I know I'm going nowhere with this ball. I'm kicking my legs out. I am drawing the contact, and I'm putting the referee in a position when he has to make that call. So if you're the defender from Ghana, you have to say, there's nothing for Cristiano Ronaldo to gain here in this position, and there's nothing for me to gain making this challenge. Just let him be. Fine, take the touch to the end line, and then shepherd him out of bounds. That's all you needed to do as a defender. He goes for the challenge, doesn't get there, ends up being a penalty.
What sort of relationship did you have with the referee? Because he's been in the MLS the same time as you.
I don't recall him in being one of my games.
Right.
But if he was, I'm sure that he'd call a few penalties.
Pablo, overall, obviously, Portugal looked great going forward, but a real vulnerability there in defence.
Yeah, they probably need to find a way to defend a little bit better because they have too many offensive players. And in a short tournament, you have to make sure that defensively you are compact, well organized, and you don't concede goals, because then, as you can see, they have Felix Joao, then they have Ronaldo, Leao in the second half, which is, for me, I was very surprised why no. He was not playing in the starting 11. Bruno Fernandes, I mean, you can see they are a really good team. Individually, if you look at that Portugal squad, they have so many talented players, but of course, as the tournament goes on, they have to do a lot better defensively.
I think some players are not in there in the World Cup yet. You know,
right.
when you see Cancelo, you know, with the talent that he has, what he showed during the season with Manchester City, I found him very weak on this side, and I would say that if they can be more solid defensively, what Cancelo can bring to the team, as he brought to Manchester City, could be a plus.
How do you get your head into the right place then? Why are some people performing and some not?
No, because some people, they need to... it's just how you appreciate the moment, you know, or maybe dislike the moment because too much pressure, whatever it can be, the weather as well, or what the coach asks you to do. That's it. And some players, like, they need a little bit of time to adjust from a club situation to a national team situation, which is completely different. But that may be the case, or maybe he simply had a bad game, and we'll see next game.
I mean, you also had unprecedented a week with no warm-up games.
Right.
You know, normally you would have a couple weeks, three games, time to get reassimilated to your national team. Maybe there's a little bit different role with your national team that there is than you play with your club team. And then it's like, nope.
There you go.
There you go. And, you know, there will be some teams that it'll take them some time to adjust. The question mark will be, will they still be in the tournament when they make those adjustments? You know, and so, yeah, you win your third game 5-0, but you lost your first two.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Your adjustment was a little late.
A word on Ghana just for a second. This is a team, right, that you look at the players on the field and you're thinking, you know what? They can be dangerous. They can hurt you. And yet today, certainly in the first half, they wanted no part of this game.
Just like passive.
And they were just kicking the ball long. And, hey, Iñaki Williams, maybe you'll do something. And if indeed that's the way you're going to set up, then okay, play the long balls. And then test the back line of Portugal. Turn Ruben Dias around. Turn Danilo around, who, by the way, is not a center back. Turn him around and see if he can withstand that pressure. Instead, Ghana, with all the pressure on top of them by Portugal, they decided, you know what's a good idea? Even though we're set up to play for the long ball, we're going to play a short, and we're going to invite more pressure, and we're going to lose the ball in bad areas. Had it not been for Portugal's inability to actually finish their opportunities that were in front of them or make the right decisions, this game should have been a whole lot simpler for Portugal. It wasn't, because their inability to finish their chances. Once they got into the second half, and now it became stretched, and now it became back and forth, and then you see Ghana pressuring Portugal and actually forcing Portugal to defend, you then saw the vulnerabilities of Portugal defensively, which then begs the question, what in the world were you in the first half, and why don't you play this way from the very beginning? Why do you need to be scored upon in order for you to actually be willing to take a step forward?
But the almost goal from the goalkeeper, that was part of it.
Right.
But some of the ridiculousness, seeing the game out in extra time, you know, taking shots from 30, getting countered, whipping balls in the box when all you had to do is keep possession. I mean, that's that part that we talked about that was not, excuse me, not what we saw from Brazil. We saw a group that said, you know what? It's a World Cup. I know it's 3-2. It's tough, but I want to score a goal in the World Cup.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do this, even though this isn't what the team needs right now. And I think Portugal has to get that side right if they're going to go further.
Is Conte the coach of Ghana? Because it looks like every time we watch Spurs, you know, during the season, this is what we saw, the reaction. Many right. teams, they play like that. They have a tactic. They want to defend every week in, week out. It's what happened with Ghana. So you react instead of acting.
Yeah,
which is doesn't work like that. Football doesn't work like that.
Paolo, we know that your boy Simeone hates him, but João Félix, all right, isn't he?
Different being Atletico Madrid and in that Portugal team. In Atletico Madrid, you have more competition, and you have a manager like Simeone who asks him to work hard for the team. Here, João Félix has more freedom to enjoy himself, his football, to express himself, his football. And he's got a great goal today. What a great finish by João Félix, which, you know, the manager of Portugal gave him, you know, the confidence to play in the starting 11. He's done well for the team, and we'll see if he will keep his place in that squad, because as I say before, for me also Leao is from Milan. He's also a really good player, and I was a little bit surprised he didn't start today.
Right then, everyone, get ready. We were accused quite a lot of being anti-Cristiano Ronaldo or okay. pro-Messi or whatever camp you're on. So let's be nice to Cristiano Ronaldo, oh. shall we? For a moment, of course, became the first man in the history of the World Cup to score in five separate tournaments. It's quite a feat, Pablo.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant achievement for a player. That's, as you say, Dan, his fifth World Cup. That's in something incredible. He's scoring all of them. And well done. You know, he has to enjoy this World Cup after what we have saw, that he's leaving Manchester United. I don't know where it is going to be or where he's going to go. But at least now he's got the opportunity to enjoy with all his teammates from Portugal and put in a good performance. And some people think that they will go far this World Cup. I was one of them. So we'll see.
Anyone else like to say anything nice about Cristiano Ronaldo?
No. No, you have to to bow a little bit in front of the altars of football. I mean, the guy is an exception. I was thinking that five World Cup means like 16 years, because it's one first and one. And I say, well, the guy was for 16 years or 17 years at the top of the top.
Yeah.
That's where you have to realize that it's a lot of job to achieve and to do. So therefore, you have to, well, really say hat off, my friend.
But I think what he also shows you is there's more to it than ability. And he shows you the professionalism. Okay, take some of the stuff in the press away, but how he looks after himself to be prepared to continue to play at this level at 38 and to keep, you know, we all say that maybe he's lost a little bit, but almost every team in the world would still love to have him in their side, even with a Ronaldo that's lost a little bit.
Not Manchester United.
Well, yeah. I think the player, Cristiano, maybe not the person, Cristiano.
Maybe he's going to buy Manchester United.
Oh, yeah? You think so?
Yes. It's the drive. It's the hunger. And sometimes in this new generation of players, we talk about those that once they hit it big, and they have that big contract, that these guys no longer have that drive and that hunger, that they are no longer motivated because they've achieved what they thought they should be achieving, and that's it. And they're comfortable with that. What you see from Cristiano Ronaldo and what we have seen over the course of his career is that he wants more and more and more all the time. And in order for him to achieve that, he has to push himself to a different level all the time. That's not easy to do. And to be able to sustain it for as long as he has speaks volumes of who the professional Cristiano Ronaldo is. Whatever you may think about him otherwise, so be it. But in terms of the professional player, Cristiano Ronaldo, and his productivity, there's nothing to question.
He's very committed. The way he talked to his goalkeeper at the end of the game, because the goalkeeper was really down and he was complaining, and he went there.
Not as down as he could have been.
True. But nobody, I found the reaction of a real captain really committed to to it, and he's great.
He wouldn't annoy you on the touchline shouting the way that he does.
I think you take it from Cristiano a little bit, right?
You accept that, you know. I don't have any problem with that. These players committed, even the shout, the thing that the coach.
Yeah.
But he has the position where I guess he's more than the coach.
But the internal motivation to continue to do it when he's broken every record, he's got more money than he'll ever spend, he's got more trophies than most player will ever have, and he just wants to keep going. You got to admire that.
One thing you can't really admire is Uruguay against South Korea. Let's talk about the game that finished 0-0. Have we got the stats for it? It's quite something. A one shot.
They gave him one shot.
On target.
It must have been the post.
That's not a target.
Oh, Valverde.
Pardon?
Valverde, it hit the post.
But a post isn't a shot on goal, is it?
That's true.
Yeah, otherwise it's not. And that's probably the most exciting discussion we're going to have about this game. Pablo, you watched this game, and from a defensive point of view, did you enjoy the 0-0, the defensive masterclass from both of these sides?
Listen, when I was playing football as a defender, all I want is just keep a clean sheet. That was the most important thing. When I kept the clean sheet, I was so happy as a defender. But of course, now I'm not playing anymore. I'm watching football, and I want to see goals. So today was terrible. The game was it was not good enough, no quality there. And again, Valverde, the only positive point of this game, he's been probably the best player of the pitch. But very little from that game. And hopefully we can see more goals. At the moment, in some of the games, I'm not sure if it is because some of the teams or managers are afraid not to lose the first game of the World Cup or of the group. But I think those teams, they can play more. I mean, Uruguay, they have Betancourt, Vecino, Valverde in midfield. They are a good player. They can play better than that. I mean, even South Korea, I think the same thing. They have a player that actually are really good technically, but is that, I don't know, they want to defend, they want to concede goal and see if they can get some chances and be a little bit clinical in front of the goal. But I think those teams, they can do a lot better than they did today.
Is that enough?
No. Let me answer. I'm going to have a conversation directly with Diego Alonso, the coach from Uruguay.
Okay.
He has to make a couple
of English? Is he watching?
No, I don't care. Well, no, he was the coach for Inter Miami. I hope he picked up some English while he was in Major League Soccer.
In Miami?
Maybe he wasn't around long enough. What I would say to him is, first decision you have to make, I know it's a tough one, Luis Suarez has to be on the bench.
Right.
He cannot start for you. He can't move. Here's the problem. In order to play this game at a high level, you have to be able to move. Luis Suarez can no longer move. So if you wanted to bring him off the bench for the last 10, 15 minutes, if you need a goal, so be it. But at this point in his career, he can now play through the middle for the Uruguayan national team. That also limits what Darwin Núñez can do from the left-hand side, because now you're forcing Darwin Núñez into a sidelines, and he cannot quite impact the game there as much as he would if he's just given the freedom to run around. He's a little out of control at times, but given the space to run around through the middle, and he's going to force something. He's going to create something for you. Play him down the middle, and then in the case of Valverde, don't give him so many defensive responsibilities. Allow him to release out of the midfield and then join in the attack, because he is the one player that is willing to stretch his legs and actually get after somebody in the offensive half. So for me, if you're Diego Alonso, stop being so conservative.
Right.
You have the players. You have the tools. Betancourt and Vecino can sit in behind. Valverde is released out of the midfield. Play Darwin Núñez through the middle, and then here we go.
But the teams that have been the most successful in this first round have been able to recuperate the ball as very quickly after they lose it. Can you see an Uruguay side that could press like that
right
with Luis Suarez in it? No. And that seems to be the theme right now, is if you can be able to attack, but then have that instant switch where you can look to win it back and put that pressure on higher up the field earlier, the success will come. And then obviously you need the talent to go along with that, which is what we've seen with France, what we've seen with Brazil and Spain, and England did a very, very good job of that.
Don't forget England.
There we go.
I know. I had to, you know.
We'll say, Pablo, you got to go to bed now.
Oh.
Thanks for finding the right camera eventually.
Oh, so the red light. Always the red light.
Follow the red light.
Always the red light.
Yeah.
Line up for the next time.
And Pablo would be the youngest defender in that Uruguayan
squad.
Well,
yeah. right, Pablo, thank you very much. Let's take a look then at how things stand in Group H after those games. Portugal then top South Korea and Uruguay, of course, with that draw, sit on one, Ghana sit bottom with 0 points. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So then, tomorrow. It's going to be quite exciting, isn't it, Casey?
What's going on? Is there a game tomorrow?
Well, it is, of course.
The right side of the table. Yes. Very interesting.
It's England against USA. Yeah. It's time for our camp report, brought to you by Modelo.
At most World Cups, the only holiday American players might miss could be a July 4th barbecue. But yet again, the Qatar World Cup proves to be different. On Thursday, while most of their fans were eating turkey and stuffing, the U.S. players were having their final meetings and preparations for Friday's important match against England. It was, in many ways, a Thanksgiving routine very different than the norm.
Every Thanksgiving, probably 30 or 40 of my family and friends all gather at my mom and dad's house back in Park Ridge, New Jersey. So yeah, we're going to miss out on that. Mom and dad are here in Qatar, so it'll be a little bit different for the people back home this time around.
The U.S. team chef stayed away from the tryptophan on Thursday and kept the meals to the normal pre-match routine for the Americans. On Saturday, though, they do have plans for a full Thanksgiving feast. Once the players have finished their day after work, they will gather together and have a full feast, complete with turkeys flown in from the U.S. for the occasion. In Doha, Sam Borden, ESPN.
Well, I suppose that'll cheer them up after the defeat. Let's remind you then we'll be looking back against England, against USA tomorrow, live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Let's take a look at everyone's predictions, shall we? Everyone is going for an England victory with the exception of Sebastian Salazar, who supports the US, and Casey Keller, who used to play for the US. Casey?
It's possible.
You can't see his face.
It's possible that my hope has outweighed what I might think might possibly happen. But look.
They can't be as bad as they were in the second half.
No, but history's on our side.
Okay.
Because England's never beaten the U.S. in a World Cup.
There you go.
1950, 1-0.
Right.
Where the English press actually thought it was a typo and printed 10-1.
Whoa.
And then didn't realize that they actually got beat by a bunch of amateurs from America. And then, obviously, in the 1-1 draw.
Yes.
And so
This is where we're going.
We're going that we're keeping with World Cup theme.
What's going to happen after when you play against Iran? You're going to think that Iran, United States cannot win against Iran because they never won against Iran?
Oh, wow.
That's true.
Bringing that up as well.
I'm talking about statistics.
Frankie, what I'm going to do, I'm going to channel my inner Shaka and flip it.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
What do you do? You've got to start Gio Reyna, don't you?
I would think so. I mean, you would assume that there'll be an array of changes when you saw, you know, how the team faded in the second half. We talked about it on this show that we felt that that there's a level of team fitness because of injuries and lack of playing time for several of the American starters in the game the other day that I don't know if they can go 3 days super intense match, 3 days super intense match. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gio comes in. I wouldn't be surprised if Aaronson comes in from the start.
Josh Sargent, does he start?
Josh might start simply because of the physicality side of playing in the championship or in the Premier League last year, where if you look at a Jesus Ferreira, unless you want to go completely opposite and go smaller, quicker, try to get around the feet of Harry Kane and Stones and maybe try to do that. But I also think that it looked like McKinney was struggling at the end of the game. I wouldn't be surprised if he was changed. And then also Dest. Dest has barely played as well. And also the criticism of Dest has been when he's really had to defend, where he wasn't had that freedom just to overlap and attack. And so maybe there's a case because of his lack of fitness and maybe you feel he's a little bit suspect defensively that you put in, potentially a Joe Scally, or maybe you even move, an Aaron Long and go with a big center back side that maybe plays a little bit wider.
We heard from Gareth Southgate today, Harry Kane will play. It looks like it'll be the same starting 11. How do you beat that England side, if from a US perspective?
Well, the first thing that you have to do, in my estimation anyways, is that you have to have clear communication with your players, which apparently Greg Berhalter has not had, because according to Berhalter, Gio Reyna had some tightness in his muscle. Then Gio Reyna comes out and says, no, I was 100% ready to go. Then Berhalter comes into his press conference, no, everybody was available, it's a coach's decision. I understand that coaches are going to manipulate the truth in terms of the availability of players, but you have to communicate that with the player so that you are on the same message. So I wonder if there is something else going on here. In regards to what happens actually on the field, you have to be willing, if you're the United States, you have to be willing to take pressure to England. Not necessarily go all out pressure, but when there are opportunities where you force England into areas where you can get numbers around the ball, then press England. Don't allow them to get comfortable. Don't allow them to be in a position in which they already feel superior coming into this match. Now you give them time and space, and now they're going to find the passes. Eventually, they build momentum, and they're too good for you. Threaten England with your pressure, and then once you have an opportunity to get forward, commit numbers forward. Be aggressive enough and believe in yourself enough to commit numbers forward where you're actually testing to see, can these guys defend? Right. Because they were not tested against Iran, and they gave up two goals.
Now, the last penalty was a little sketchy, though.
But they gave chances.
Yeah.
Pickford had to come up with a big save against Asmund, right? Yeah. So my point is, when we have seen England defending against Iran, who were very limited, they had some issues. So take those chances when you have the opportunity to do so. Not all the time, not like crazy. Organize pressure. Once you force the turnover, commit those numbers forwards and force England to defend.
I think you will need, in order to beat England, to be at the top of the top. Mm. And I doubt about it because we talked about the physical aspect of that team where we saw them being tired at the beginning of the second half. And you will have on top of that, for them to be on top of the top, their top, to have England not being as well as they've been offensively. Otherwise, there is no chance to see, for me, United States winning against England.
You know, he asked me how they can beat them, right?
What I want to say, you have to pray that England doesn't play its best football
Oh. Yeah, you're definitely going to need some things to go your way, for
right.
sure. Yeah. Maybe the big overconfidence from scoring six
exactly.
goals.
The arrogance.
You know,
the French arrogance.
The French arrogance for the English team.
That could be
It happens. It happens often.
Yeah.
It's not a miracle that you are expecting. It's something that can happen easily in football. We saw that in some games where some teams are getting overconfident.
Wow.
They're playing the Oscars music.
That's it. What if England lose, Casey? They have to come in tomorrow.
Well, the only good part is if you win, you're not very heavy on my back.
And we'll be there.
Extra time is next. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It's the Extra Time brought to you by Globant. Hello, welcome into the studio. Casey with us, as is Ali and Frank.
I tell you, if you lose England tomorrow,
I'm normally off. There's no chance.
But I swear, I pass by the studio just to say hi.
Don't know. Frank, come in. I'll pick you up, Frankie.
Oh, thank
and
you very
can
much.
Come in with
oh,
me.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll
I just want to
together.
See your face, you know, live, you know. Say,
and he might have a couple Scotsmen as well on the show, which would love that more than anything.
Yeah. Just put you under pressure.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, it is. It is. Thank you as always for your tweets. I'll get to your tweets in a moment. I'm not sure if you saw this. This is absolutely brilliant. This is our colleagues ESPN Brazil interviewing a young fan of Serbia ahead of their clash against Brazil. This is what he said.
Nasser, what are you going to expect for the match on Thursday?
I think that Serbia will win 3-0 for Brazil because Mitrovic will score two goals for the start, and the second half Vlahovic will score because the whole defense is terrifying, and Neymar is going to fall and cry like a baby.
It's just such a brilliant accent, isn't it?
I love it.
It's fantastic. It's so convincing.
It didn't quite work out that way, though.
No, it didn't. It didn't. Let me know. That kid could beat me up, couldn't he?
Come on.
Hey, the bar is low. The bar is very low.
Sorry. Yes. Okay. Happy Thanksgiving, says the first tweet. With the first round of group matches done, who disappointed you the most and who ended up impressing you the most?
Wow. Clearly Argentina for me.
It was a big disappointment for
you. Yeah, it has to be. I mean, most people they thought that they could win the World Cup. Well, of course, it's not the end of it. And Spain lost in 2010, their first game, I think it was against Switzerland, but they showed something else.
Mm. Right.
We saw almost nothing.
Yeah.
We saw what we saw before, where if Messi is not at the top of the top, Argentina can do nothing. And we thought it was a different Argentina.
So was Messi the biggest disappointment for you as well?
No.
Because why does Messi get a pass?
No, because that's what we were all expecting before, because they weren't that good. We thought they would be better, and with a great Messi, they would be perfect. I think Messi cannot do everything, and when you expect too much from your genius, it doesn't work.
Well. Germany have to be in that conversation as well.
I forgot they
lost. You know, considering you hate the Germans. It's why they're not part of the conversation.
No, if I hated the Germans, I would be remembering that they lost. It was just I was off yesterday, I think.
But for 70 minutes, they're cruising.
Right.
And again, we talked about sometimes the overconfidence or whatever it was. And we still know that this is a German side that is still... you know, begging for a world-class striker to finish things off. But, and we know Japan's a tenacious little, you know, you'd like it. They're like a little, you know, like a little Jack Russell Terrier biting at your ankles the whole time. So, but they embarrassed you in the end, and Germany has to be disappointed.
Best player, most impressed player, Jude Bellingham, obviously, I suppose.
Well, he's good.
Yeah. Jude was good.
Yeah. Well, Gabby was pretty good.
Gabby wasn't bad.
Yeah, that's
all right. Yeah. Richarlison, 2 goals.
Yeah. Richarlison, not a bad strike.
That doesn't hurt.
Olivier Giroud, 2 goals.
Yeah. Mbappe is still giving nightmares to the Australian. Yeah.
I tried to find a defender because I hate naming strikers. Yeah.
Right, come on then.
They couldn't find any.
Godin.
Godin. 0-0. 7-year-old. Clean sheet.
Yep, exactly.
Exactly.
Any changes made to your predictions after the first round of games? We know Shaq has now gone from Argentina to Brazil. He quickly did that. Anything? You obviously won Denmark-Brazil final.
Yeah, Denmark-Brazil final. And I said that Canada is going to go far.
Right.
So I'm not changing anything.
No?
No. So far,
there was moments where Canada looked good.
I think there were some moments where... If I remember my prediction, I think I put Costa Rica going through.
How is that working?
Yes.
I met Navas lately, yeah, so I guess the other guy will be... But I can change my mind about Costa Rica.
I had Qatar going through.
Oh, you did well than me.
Why do you do this to yourself? Nobody had mentioned the possibility that you had Qatar. Can I just go back to the initial question?
No, we've moved on.
No, because he just mentioned Costa Rica. Can it be that my most impressive, or who I've been most impressed by, is Spain, and least impressed or most disappointed, Costa Rica, and their inability to compete in that game?
Yeah.
It's a World Cup, man. And some of these guys were walking around when they were already losing 4-0, and it's like, it's all right, good. It's all right, guys. It's cool.
Yeah.
No! I would kill to be in the World Cup. These guys were taking it for granted they're getting beat, by the way.
It's also tough, Ollie, because, CONCACAF at times, gets a little that maybe we shouldn't have as many bids in the World Cup. Panama had a tough World Cup.
Yep.
How's CONCACAF got on? Lost? Drew?
Lost.
Drew.
Drew. Yes. Mexico, U.S. drew, Canada, and lost. So, but it's one thing losing the way Canada lost.
Right.
Against a team like Belgium, who for big sections of that match, they outplayed Belgium. But to Ollie's point, to roll over and just allow yourself a whooping is...
Belgium could be in the discussion. Because even if they won, really, I saw nothing. I was so disappointed by their game. And even De Bruyne seemed to be lost.
He had a tough day.
Upset, frustrated. I mean, that wasn't the Belgium team that I used to.
He was given the man of the match, by the way.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good for him.
There we go.
I hope he accepted it.
I also had Iran to go through.
Oh, you're on fire. Okay.
Okay, for all, the World Cup has had 4-0-0 matches already, whereas there was only one in 2018. Why do you think that is? Is it the time of year the tournament's being played? Is it more competitive tournament? Does VAR, auto offsides limit goal scoring, or something else?
Anomaly.
Just an anomaly? Yeah. Just the way it is?
Just happened.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Some of the decision-making by coaches has been very, very conservative.
No, we're talking about Uruguay. Yeah. Just don't lose.
And in the case of Uruguay, for example, so they play South Korea, right? You would think that that's a game that they're thinking, we got to get 3 points here, because after that is going to be Portugal and Ghana. So maybe this is where you play with the intent to win, and you put your numbers forward and you take a chance. You win this game, you set up the group in a different manner than what it is now. Now you're going to struggle to get out. I just don't understand the conservative approach of teams, certainly when you're playing against a team that I think is gettable in the case of...
But I think some of that conservatism comes from the statistics that show you, if you lose your first game, how hard it is for you to get out of that first round. So at least if I got a point in the bag in the first game, I can make adjustments after that and give myself an opportunity in that third game to win, help my goal difference, whatever, but... But then also, on the flip side, if you start with 3 points,
you
the statistics of going through as well.
For me, I think some smaller teams, they've done the job defensively, and they've been very tuned in, and they worked all together. But I think, overall, I would say, I found some clumsiness on the last pass, the assist. On the final third, I said, wow, no, you're professional, man. You can't miss that one. Many, many times, I wondered, is it because, as you say, an anomaly, or it is because, players are less technical than before? I don't know.
Did you guys find you played significantly better with your club team or national team?
Well, I'd like to think that I had some pretty good games for both. But,
well.
But I think there's times. I think there's times where whatever the setup is for whichever, that you just feel really comfortable in that environment.
Right.
You have times where, you know, you, when you go in with the national team, it's almost like a break from football. I don't know, Frank, Ollie, if you...
That's completely the opposite.
Okay.
I never felt comfortable with the national team. I felt so... so relieved when I was
even living in England, getting a chance to go back to France.
I almost went into it. I enjoy my time every time I was playing with the club, and I like part of the family and the reunion that we have with the national team. Even if I had good games, some mini games, good games, I never felt that I was at 100%. I could launch a long ball. You know, I like the long passes, the long range. I don't know. I felt like. Everybody had an eye on me, like if you do bad, you miss one pass, they're going to be smashed the day after, you know, be kicked out. Why is it easy with the national team? Where I never felt that with the club.
Isn't that weird?
No, yeah. I would go, you know, hey, I'll play in a Gold Cup instead of going back to preseason. I'd rather just kind of have a play some competitive matches.
I never
matches.
Said that I didn't enjoy my time. I enjoyed
you said
my
you
time.
You hated it.
He pretty much did say that.
Well, that's the transition that you made of it.
Yeah.
But no. I enjoyed my time being with the national team, but I never felt absolutely without any pressure.
Right.
The roles change for me, playing for the club and playing for country. For club, you're thinking, okay, I want to score this weekend, right? That's what you're preparing for because that's your job. You're a striker. You're there to score goals. For country is... hold on to the ball, draw some fouls, make it difficult for the defenders because we're playing against Brazil or we're playing against Argentina or we're playing whoever in a World Cup qualifier, and we know we're not getting many chances. So we're going to absorb a lot of pressure. We're going to draw a lot of fouls. So it's a different mindset. The other thing I would say is the pressure of playing for the national team either elevates your game or puts you in a place in which you no longer belong at that level. I don't think there's an in-between there. You find players that are able to play at that level, and then other guys who come in for a couple of call-ups, and clearly, you know, from the very beginning, they don't feel comfortable, they don't feel right, they can't quite express themselves, and they do not belong in that conversation. And elevating your level at the national team, if you're able to take that to your club, I think that's the key. Because that means that whatever you've been able to do in this pressure environment, you take it to your club and you're able to perform in that sort of pressure, with that sort of level, with that sort of intensity and urgency on a continuous basis, on a consistent basis with your club level. It's only going to make you better on both.
For me, it was also, you know, when I went to England, there was no league in America.
Right.
You know, I was in England 4 years before MLS started. And then coming home with the national team and playing games was my connection to the American fan.
Okay.
You know, and it was that opportunity then to be in different cities and play big games and, you know, play that kind of side where, you know, I didn't have that. And then when I was in Europe for 17 years, you know, you just, okay, I'm home now. I'm in this tournament. I'm in this game. It's, okay, cool.
Here's that connection.
Here's that connection that I never had until I was able to go home with the Sounders at the end of my career to truly kind of engage at home with the fans.
I'll put it to you this way, Dan. My greatest achievement as a player is finishing fourth in Copa America 2011.
Right. Not winning
three MLS Cups. That's not...
Okay.
Well, that was great. And that's something that I'm very proud of. That run in Copa America 2011, that put us in a different category. And it made you feel part of something special.
Cornwall FC never called me up. Frank's been having some problems today. No turtleneck. And what happens, Frank? Your shirt keeps going under your jacket.
Yes, I have a problem. I think it's a shirt just to wear a tie with.
Where's the turtleneck gone?
Where's the tie?
No, I think today it's Thanksgiving, so it's different level. So
different level.
And I'm invited. I'm going straight after. I'm going to Dan Thomas' place, and I promise you, I'm going to vacuum the house after I leave, and I'm going to put everything in
dishes.
The dishwasher.
Yeah.
I'm going to put everything.
Yeah.
Casey's with me, so
I'll help you out.
We're going to make sure the house is clean.
Speaking of Thanksgiving. Casey, since you played in Europe during the majority of your career, how did you typically spend the Thanksgiving holiday?
Typically, it would be invite some teammates over.
Right.
You know, kind of try to have as typical a Thanksgiving as you can have, even though it's just training in the morning.
Yes.
And just a normal day. I did upset my wife one time because it was Thanksgiving and I was somewhat injured.
Okay.
And
what is somewhat injured?
Well, I was playing, but I was really shouldn't be playing.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't happy with the situation. And so I had made some phone calls after training and I flew to Munich to see Bayern Munich's doctor that afternoon.
Right.
And Kristen had been cooking and, you know, turkeys and everything. And I spent the whole day.
What was the name of the doctor in Germany?
It was Müller Wohlfahrt.
Oh, yeah.
So I went and saw Müller Wohlfahrt, and
is he a famous doctor for those?
Very famous doctor. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just talking about him as if.
Have you been seen by him, Dan?
No, no, he's a.
And so yes,
did he say you need to pierce your ear?
No, it was.
And if you want to see further, many holes
in the ear. Oh my God!
If I had known that,
yeah, I know,
I wouldn't have had to go, and I wouldn't have upset Kristen.
Okay, she could just got a knitting needle, shoved it in your ear.
That's it.
Perfect.
Hey, why doesn't he take you seriously?
Final question.
No, he doesn't want. To learn. Culture.
Happy Turkey Day, boys. Dan, how fun is Frank at parties on a scale from 1 to 10? Oh, he's a 10. Frank's great company. He's brilliant.
Finally, we have something nice coming out of Dan Thomas' mouth.
No, but
about myself.
No, but you're good for a party because you're just there.
I'm always good because I'm a nice guy towards others. So even if I'm a bad person, you're not supposed to know.
I don't think anyone's accusing you of being a bad person.
I've never heard anybody quite critical. Hey, watch out for that Frank LaBeouf guy. Yeah, that's a bad guy, right?
Yeah. You're going to see it. The other side of the coin. You know,
there you go.
Know.
And we got Thanksgiving at mine now tonight?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe I burn
your
house. Maybe I burn your house. You know, you don't know.
My house down.
A bit aggressive.
I don't know.
You have an insurance? Or?
Yeah, coming handy at the moment.
Actually. Okay, good.
There we go. There we are.
I'm always good.
Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the turkey.
There we go.
Hey.
There it was. It's back.
There it is.
The turkey.
Oh, you like the turkey?
I heard it now.
It was cute. Yes.
There we go.
It was cute.
Somebody was laughing.
It's going to be quite the evening. That is it. ESPN FC is back on your screens tomorrow. So much to talk about. Our Thanksgiving dinner and England against USA.
Hey!
Whoa.
Come on, guys. Don't fight.